This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's time for a weekly look at what's happening this week in Wisconsin news. Today, a big week in state politics. Governor Walker was sworn in for his second term, has plans ahead that look a bit like the plans of somebody maybe priming the pump for a presidential bid. Also, the Assembly released its school accountability bill. That's getting a lot of attention. One person paying attention, Noah Ovshinsky. He joins us each week to catch us up on Wisconsin news. Noah, welcome back.
It's good to be here, and happy Friday, Rob.
Happy Friday to you as well. Well, it was a big day for Governor Walker. Re-inaugurated, term two kicks off.
Yeah, exactly. He delivered his second inauguration speech on Monday. And I have to say, his speech struck a similar tone to the one he gave on election night, right after basically his acceptance speech. And in a sense, he contrasted what he was doing in Wisconsin to what he sees happening in Washington, D.C. Here's a bit of the sound from the inauguration speech.
There is a clear contrast between Washington and Wisconsin. We have been good stewards of the taxpayers' money and lowered their tax burden as well. We've shown why the founders of this great nation looked to the states and not the federal government as the source of hope for this exceptional country. We will not let them down.
So, you know, Congress, record low approval ratings again and again in the last couple of years. So what do you make of this contrast?
Yeah, I mean, I think this contrast between Washington and D.C. Could be a compelling message to certain voters, especially primary voters. And, you know, as you sort of alluded to, you know, with the governor exploring a run for president, I think it's a message he feels like he needs to, you know, get out there.
So that contrast between Wisconsin and the nation's capital, a big theme. What else do we hear from the governor?
Yeah, so beyond that contrast, the governor also talked about freedom. In fact, I think it was one of the really major themes that he brought up during the speech. Here again is the governor talking about freedom, the other big theme.
In Wisconsin, we understand that true freedom and prosperity do not come from the mighty hand of the government. They come from empowering people to control their own lives and their own destinies through the dignity that is born from work.
So again, he's talking to Wisconsin here, but is he pitching this to a wider audience?
Absolutely. You know, this idea of freedom, especially in the context of, you know, the size of government or its role in people's lives. It, you know, again, it's a compelling message and one that comes up a lot, especially for somebody who has national ambitions, somebody who's looking to maybe gain traction with primary voters, conservative primary voters, looking toward a possible presidential run.
Now, this could have been a laundry list of things he'd like to see passed this year with the Republican legislature. Do we get any specific policy notions out of this speech?
Yeah, he talked a bit about a few things, and we've obviously talked about it for the last several weeks as the news has come out about them. But the governor talked about reducing the size and scope of government. Of course, he's talked about shrinking certain agencies and combining certain agencies here in the state. His desire to prioritize funding for roads. Again, this debate over how we're going to pay for infrastructure is ongoing and will certainly, I think, probably at some point come to a head here in the coming weeks as he presents his budget. And he also alluded to his desire to expand the state's voucher school program, which, again, is something that he's talked a lot about and one that will most likely come up here in the coming weeks.
Now, there's been some attention on the governor's travel plans this week.
Yeah, talking about possible presidential ambitions, the governor plans to attend an event in Iowa geared towards conservatives called the Freedom Summit. And not coincidentally, he will be joining other presidential hopefuls, including Governor Chris Christie, Senator Ted Cruz, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, and others.
So why is he going? Why is he joining this list of rumored potential presidential candidates?
Well, the Iowa caucuses are a year-ish away. So I think, you know, this will be one of the multiple trips to Iowa I think the governor will likely take in 2015. So I think this is the start, I think. This is just the beginning.
And I've heard from some political observers on this show that Iowa, for early primary states, that's as close as Governor Walker gets to home field advantage. So
yeah,
it makes sense for him to put some time in there.
And he's been there a few times, if not several times, in the last few years. So, I mean, I think this is just the beginning again of he'll be let's just say this, he'll be logging a lot of miles between between Madison and Iowa.
No, I spent a weekend in Dubuque a few years ago, and I got like no media attention, not even from my colleagues here at WPR. I'm a little hurt, frankly.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, I'm probably never going to run for president. That would just go so anyway. We don't need to open that door, people. Well, looking ahead now, this inauguration speech isn't always the laundry list policy thing, but the governor has a couple events coming up that tend to be more policy focused.
Yeah, his State of the State address is coming up next week. And the governor also said this week that he plans to release his budget on February 3rd, which, if you keep track of these kinds of things, by historical standards, is quite early. And, you know, I think it's a testament to how quickly he wants to get this budget process wrapped up, certainly by the, you know, beginning of summer.
And as we say from time to time here, when we talk, the budget's the big deal. I mean, so much of what happens in state policy comes down to this budget document.
Absolutely. And basically, it's a testament to what his priorities are, what the priorities of his administration are. And I think, again, you know, all of this will be taken in a national context. Everything that happens in the legislature from now until when this budget is signed, that has national implications for the governor if indeed he's looking to run for president.
Now, state lawmakers are waiting for this budget. That is the big deal they'll have to deal with. But they're not just twiddling their thumbs waiting for that. A school accountability bills, different options are starting to come out now.
Right. So the Assembly Republicans unveiled their school accountability bill this week. And I think it was the first piece of legislation to drop this session. Now, this issue of school accountability has been controversial in recent years. So I think a lot of people were waiting to see what this bill was actually going to look like.
So what are the fundamentals that people have been looking for in this kind of legislation?
So at its most basic level, it's going to create a letter grade system for schools, A through F. And where it gets interesting, though, is what happens to schools who repeatedly don't measure up, basically fail.
So, yeah, what happens in at least this early incarnation of this bill to those schools?
And yes, let's emphasize it. This is this is an early incarnation. But as the bill, as it stands now, it depends. For traditional public schools, it requires schools that receive a D or F for 3 years to come up with a plan to fix things. And if after 4 years the school isn't measuring up, it will be turned into a charter school.
And that's the public schools. Now, how about the voucher schools, the private schools that receive some funding via vouchers that pass through the families involved?
Right. So they, too, are going to be graded, although they may be graded by a different criteria, potentially. But private schools that accept voucher students, if they fail, they would have to stop taking voucher students for 4 years.
And now this came up last session. The idea of school accountability didn't end up passing by the end of the session. Are things expected to be different this time?
You know, I don't have a crystal ball. You know, during the last session, though, you know, some lawmakers felt like, you know, these penalties were too harsh. This issue of, you know, how do we punish essentially schools that don't measure up? Assembly Speaker Robin Voss suggested to reporters this week that things are different this time around. He says the makeup of the Assembly and Senate has changed, so much so that passing this kind of legislation or one incarnation of this legislation is really a possibility. Now, I don't think everybody's on the same page. You've talked with folks, lawmakers, who certainly may be on a different page.
Right.
But at least as far as Robin Voss is concerned, you know, he thinks the situation has changed.
Yeah, this could be a case we're hearing from a couple different observers on this issue where there are differences among Republicans in the legislature, but they're probably going to hammer those out and pass something. Have we heard from Governor Walker on this?
A little bit. The governor weighed in this week, and he basically told reporters that it's headed in the right direction, that it has some of the pieces that he's looking for in any kind of school accountability bill.
And the Democrats, a minority in both houses, but what are they saying?
Yeah, Democrats called the plan essentially a giveaway or a gift to the backers of private schools, and they say they suggest that these are the same people who support Republicans during their campaigns.
All right. Well, from the schools now to the courts, some legislation on how we get a chief justice here of our state Supreme Court.
Right. So there's a proposed constitutional amendment that would essentially require members of the court to elect the chief justice. And the Assembly Judiciary Committee held that hearing on that amendment this week. Right now, the longest serving justice is automatically the chief.
That's Shirley Abramson right now. What are people saying about the motives behind this?
Right. So some court watchers say it's basically an attempt by conservatives to unseat the current chief, Shirley Abrahamson. She is considered a liberal. They also say that voting will sort of insert politics in what is basically an administrative function that requires a lot of experience on the court.
So what's the case for this?
Well, supporters of the change, and this includes former Supreme Court Justice John Wilcox, and he says it will actually lessen some of the bitter infighting that has taken place in the past few years. Wilcox argues that it will actually increase transparency and create space for new ideas if the court itself is in charge of voting for who becomes the Chief Justice.
And briefly, the Chief Justice you mentioned oversees other courts. Are we hearing from lower court justices?
Right. So, yeah, this is a position that oversees basically the state's court system. And, you know, circuit court judges have weighed in on the issue. A former state appeals court judge this week during the hearing said every circuit court judge should get a vote. Not just the members of the Supreme Court, but in fact, every circuit court judge.
This is a constitutional amendment, or would be. What's the timeline looking ahead?
Right. So both the Senate and Assembly have actually approved this bill. They approved it last session. So if it is approved this year, it will be on the April 7th ballot.
All right. Noah, thanks as always for keeping us up to date.
It was good to be here. Thanks, Rob.
That's Noah Ovshinsky, our Central Time news guy, official title Assistant News Director at WPR. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard is back with me on Tuesday. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.